This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hey everybody, welcome back. You're listening to another Place to Be Nation pod blast discussing the greatest WWE wrestlers of all time. I'm Ben Morse. I'm one half of the Can-Am Connection, and the other half of that connection, coming from the Great White North, it's my buddy Aaron George.
Yeah, Tom Zenk right here, baby.
I think you'd be Rick Martel, pal.
No thanks.
We're not talking about Rick Martel today. We could talk about the model at another time, but this is another in the series of pod blasts, little bite-sized podcasts, breaking down the greatest WWE wrestler of all time project. And we had a pretty good discussion when we talked about Christian. I think things might break down a little more here when we talk about today's subject, and that is the architect himself, the Kingslayer, Seth Rollins. Do you want to dive right into the categories, Aaron?
Imagine how many more nicknames he'll have in 10 years.
It's going to be amazing. Yeah. I'll start by saying Seth Rollins is my favorite current wrestler in WWE. Right. I enjoy his work. I just think he's an exciting performer. I like his devil may care, reckless attitude, which unfortunately has led to some injuries among his peers, but I think it makes for an exciting in-ring style. I think his promos are on. I preferred him a little more as a heel than a babyface, but I think he's kind of working his way in. But yeah, that's just me gushing about Seth Rollins is not what this podcast needs to be, although it might end up being that.
But it won't be completely because.
Oh no! Let's get the other side, man. Let's get the counterpoint.
Seth Rollins makes me less interested to be a wrestling fan than almost anybody on the roster today. Like I have issues with a couple guys, but he's probably the one that stands out close to the top. There's probably one other one which we'll talk about another time, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, he. And it stems more from disappointment than anything else.
Okay. Oh, I thought you had more.
Nope. I will. But we'll hit it when we hit the categories, I guess.
All right. Let's get to the categories. I'm sorry to hear that. I'm sorry that someone who brings me such joy brings you such pain. That's just that cuts me deep. But yeah, let's talk about the categories we're using to assess these guys. And the first one would be nuance. And this is where I think Seth excels. I think he's great at little things. I think he's good at doing moves that will pop the crowd, obviously. I think that's kind of his forte. I think he does transitions well. I think he is able to fly or wrestle on the mat, so I think he has a lot of versatility. Again, I think he's not as good. Early in his career when he was with the Shield, I think he was actually a better promo then than he might be now as a babyface. But I think I'll stand my ground on saying I think he was a great heel promo. I think he was one of the few heel promos who could wrestle like a babyface, which he did, but still get over as a heel. So to me, Seth Rollins has a lot of nuance.
See, and I think I have the opposite view of that, is I think the fact that he was a heel and wrestled like a babyface hurts the character and shows a lack of versatility that I would say the greatest of all time have. Mm. Like Randy Savage would wrestle differently when he was a heel than he was a face.
True. You know?
I would even say Chris Jericho too, like to just throw out a couple. There's lots. But I think that kind of hurt him. I'd like to know what you think of the little things, because I don't know if those fall more into nuance, if they fall more into work rate. But for me, he's not a nuanced character at all. Like, there's nothing. Like, what is his character? Like, who is he? Like, aside from just the vague architect. Triple H, for example, and as crazy it is that I'm using him as a positive.
Yeah, seriously.
Right? You knew what he was about. He was about winning the title. He was about that he felt undervalued. He was about this. He had clear character goals. And that's an indictment of everybody today, right? Mm-hmm. But by being a guy who gets as much screen time as he does, it's pretty crazy to me that Seth Rollins isn't a little more nuanced in that way. Like a perfect example is when he was fighting Kevin Owens for the Universal title, and when that was done, all of a sudden it was just, okay, I'm on to Triple H. And there's no direction or any sort of character work done there.
Right. I will say, I think his most recent babyface run has hurt him a little bit. But I think when he was a heel, he did have a very defined character, more so than anyone else. And to me, that character was the guy who was willing to be a heel, which is not always a common skill in today's WWE or today's wrestling landscape. But he was the guy who, you know, had the skills to get things done. This is classic heel stuff. He had the skills to win the match, but he would prefer to get it done through chicanery. Well, he would prefer to do it with help. And he didn't need it, but he preferred it.
Well, and that's the thing here is that, like, I think we're probably going to keep coming back to this with him, is he has, you're right, he has the skills to get it done. He has the skills to work as a heel, but he didn't. He worked as a face.
Hmm.
Right? And if he wanted to go full heel, there's things he could have taken out of his arsenal that would have been fine, you know?
Yeah, no, I get you there. I mean, that's an indictment, is that he kept the big crowd pop moves in his arsenal as a heel. He could have definitely gotten a lot more mileage out of teasing them and not doing that. But again, I'll go back to the fact that I think the fact that Seth Rollins could do a Phoenix Splash and get it booed is a compliment to the work he did character-wise and promo-wise, as opposed to an indictment on him not being able to wrestle as a heel. I think, quite frankly, he didn't have to wrestle as a heel because he got over as a heel in other ways.
See, I just don't remember. Maybe I'm not remembering, but I don't remember that ever getting booed.
Like the Phoenix, yeah.
Yeah, like I remember the first time he did it, I think, was at the Rumble in Philly in 2015.
Sure.
And I mean, he's in there with, he's doing it on John Cena, so.
Yeah.
Heck, of course, he gets cheered, right?
But he was one of the few guys to get booed against John Cena, I would argue.
See, I don't remember that. I remember him getting cheered, but.
I remember him in his SummerSlam feud where Cena had the U.S. title and Rollins had the WWE title being the clear heel. And that was Cena coming off the Owens series, so he had gotten some goodwill, so there's some credit there. But. Mm. I remember Rollins getting booed. And if you want to talk about Rollins getting booed, to me, the quintessential Seth Rollins feud, both in terms of matches and in terms of promos, is his feud with Dean Ambrose. I mean, that's his arch rival. And I just remember, I'll put right out there that I think Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins had the best lumberjack match in the history of WWE. And that's a short list. Because there's not a lot of good lumberjack matches. That is a shitty stipulation.
Yeah.
But these guys were somehow able to make what they called the human cage work well, and I give them a lot of credit. And I give Rollins as a general in the ring, because I'm not a big Dean Ambrose guy. I give Rollins a lot of credit for that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we're kind of in the jump up now, because we're talking about the matches, right? Which is good.
What a smooth transition.
I know, eh? It was like
a Rollins-esque transition.
Sure. No, I will definitely agree that was probably the best lumberjack match. But
that's damning with faint praise for sure.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean it was bad. Like
I think I
want to say I had it maybe at like three and a quarters. Like it was good. It was a very good match. There's pages to be written about what happened when the Shield broke up, right?
Right.
Like, in terms of like who was cast in what roles and whatnot. I will say that as he did feel like the biggest star coming out of the breakup.
Absolutely. And you didn't think he was going to.
No.
That was not where people saw it going. But I think he emerged. I think, and this speaks a lot to, like, if you watch, like, WWE 24 documentaries on him and stuff like that, he seems like the one who was willing to work the hardest.
Yeah.
And I think that hurts him to some degree with some of the points you've made, because I think he wants to put on the best match he can for people, and sometimes that doesn't mean wrestling as a heel, which if he was a bit more concerned with being a good heel than going out and having the match of the night, he might be able to earn some points with people like you. But I respect the fact that coming out of the Shield, he was determined to be a star, and he got himself over by any means necessary. He had a lot of help. But he didn't, you know, drop the ball at any point, I don't think.
No, I don't think the ball dropping was necessarily on him, on an individual level. I think there's some things he does on an individual level, and I think we'll talk about that when we get to work rate.
Mm-hmm.
But on a booking level, when he turned heel, he felt like the biggest star. in a way. In another way, they just decided Reigns was a main eventer, which was odd. I mean, that was an odd decision. But it was just odd because, like, they're all at the same level, and then the next week Reigns was a main eventer, and Ambrose and Rollins were in a mid-card.
Fighting in the mid-card, yeah.
For a guy, though, who had so much time on TV, promo, matches, everything, there's just hardly anything to actually mine from that as a great moment or even really a great... We're going to talk about a couple of great matches, right? But,
sure.
But it's far too few for the opportunity he had, in my view.
Yeah, I mean, he was on TV a lot, and I think I would look more at his consistency. I thought he was a consistent heel. I thought, you know, he had the albatross around his neck of having to go out and be part of those 20-minute authority segments every show, and I thought he acquitted himself as well as he could. He was basically in the role that Triple H was in back in 2000, where he would monopolize the beginning of the show to talk, and I do think Seth had some good moments with him there. But to your point, and I will concede, he didn't have any blow-away standout promos that we're going to be talking about for years to come. It was more, to me, just consistent, solid character work to get himself over as a heel, and that's what I'll keep leaning back on, that he got himself over as a heel when I would think if you had shown people the Shield and you had said which of these guys can get over as a heel, he would have been the least likely factor because he was the crowd pleaser of the Shield.
Yeah, like, yeah, I would agree with that. Like, I would totally agree that he did make the most of his character work.
Right.
Like, and I think that definitely helps his case in some level. Again, it's just like you need to have, like, and this is something I've been stressing even on our Facebook group too, is that, like, it's if you're judging the 100 best, right, good at sometimes just isn't going to cut it.
Sure.
Like, you, and again, it some people take that as, oh my God, you hate Seth Rollins, and in this case, I don't really like him. but when we're scrutinizing these guys, it's not to shit on them in any way. It really is just to shine a light as to the ones that are better and stronger.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think, you know, we're exposing the fact. I will sit here and defend Seth Rollins, as I think he's an entertaining character. I think he's a good wrestler, but I'm not blind to the fact that he doesn't have the resume that some of these other guys have. You could not put together the highlight package of both matches and promos that someone in his position, who was basically in the main event for well over a year as the man in the company and still has a prominent role today, he doesn't have a catalog of phenomenal matches. He has a lot of good matches,
yeah.
And I think he did a lot with what he was given, and he was given a lot. But I concede he does not have that standout promo and doesn't have that all-time five-star match. He has plenty more good matches, I think, than most people, and I don't think there are many bad Seth Rollins matches, which is a point I'm sure you'll be willing to argue. I think he does well when he's in there, even with the likes of, like, Kane or something like that. But let us not forget that of Sting's two WWE matches, Seth Rollins was able to deliver the much better Sting match than Triple H.
And ended his career.
And ended his career in one fell swoop.
Woo!
Yes, absolutely. Put him out on top.
Look, I wouldn't say there's a lot of bad Seth Rollins matches. I would say there's a lot of boring Seth Rollins matches. Mm. That's my contention with him.
Sure.
And for me, that's actually worse. Because he's so athletically gifted. Like, my problem with him in the ring is not that he can't do these amazing things, because he does. He does these phenomenal things. But when I watch his matches, there doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason to why things are happening.
Right.
Like, there's no transitions. It's very much like, okay, it's my turn to get offense in, now it's your turn to get offense in. Whereas if you're watching the all-time greats, you know, if you're watching, say, like a Bret Hart, you know, there's a reason he loses the offensive advantage.
Right.
Right? Seth Rollins, it never feels that way. It's rough for me because it's built into his character that he should, because he has the potential to be reckless and whatnot, right?
Right, right, so right.
You'd think that they would use those transitions to tell the story in the ring.
Absolutely.
And I wish he did that more. Like what I said at the beginning about how a lot of my dislike of Seth Rollins comes from disappointment is because you see all the tools there. He reminds me a lot of Randy Orton in a lot of ways. Like, Randy Orton is the guy who's been on top of the promotion for, and I don't want this to descend into a discussion on Randy Orton, but like...
No, we won't let it.
Yeah, but like, he's been in the promotion forever with, I want to say, the same kind of success rates in great matches as Seth Rollins has, if you look at opportunity versus actual results. You get what I mean?
I'll give you that. I will say this. I think Seth has more of a work ethic than Randy Orton ever had. I see your point on the lack of transitions and his offense not always making sense, not really being the best storyteller in the ring. But I think he still works hard. That's what I keep leaning back to, is that he's a hard worker. And that's something I don't think you can say about Orton. I think with Rollins and Orton, another parallel for them is Orton had Cena ahead of him in the pecking order for his entire career, and he had to deal with that. And I think Rollins similarly has Reigns ahead of him in the pecking order, and he's always going to have Reigns ahead of him in the pecking order. And his ability to overcome that to a degree that I don't think Orton ever did with Cena, I think is a point in his favor. I think he definitely had a period where he seemed like the bigger star than Reigns and then Ambrose. And again, that's getting back to the Shield stuff.
Yeah, I think it's great that he works hard, and I want him to be better. My only comment to that is, like, I think Heidenreich worked hard. You know, like, I bet he worked hard.
He did.
It just didn't. In the end, I want results when I'm comparing him to the top 100.
True. Have we covered promos, you think, sufficiently, or do you want to talk a little bit more about his promo?
I mean, you like him as a, you like him. I really don't like him as a promo. Like, I just find it's
dig into that.
But I don't know if that's his fault. Like, it's, I don't think he has the skill set to be doing 20-minute promos. Like, I don't think a lot of guys have that skill set. I don't think a lot of guys should be doing them.
Sure.
So, like, it's not his fault they send him out there. I think he'd be fine in the 2-3 minute promo range.
Yeah,
he's probably fine. But he's kind of hamstrung there, and unfortunately, that's what we get. I don't like him as a face promo at all. Like,
no, and I did like him as a face promo when he was in the Shield.
Yeah.
So that's a shame that he's fallen down. But I think that's emblematic of the fact that they don't know how to build good faces.
Well, yeah, they don't.
Which
know.
Which is, of course, a more global discussion, which we're not going to have here.
No, but that's just it. Is that like there's nothing. There's nothing to the face characters anymore. There's no motivations. There's nothing. So, and what are they? Like, you know, like, I mean, you have the other end of the spectrum where Triple H is everything. Like, he's the funny guy, the serious guy, the tough guy, the Latin guy. Like, he's everything. Right? And then, like, but then you have these guys who are just, okay, I could create you in a video game, and that's what it is, you know?
Yeah.
And again, but it's not his fault.
Why don't we go right into work rate and kind of put a bow on this one, because I think we've gotten some good discussion and I think we're going to agree to disagree on a lot of this stuff. But work rate is the one category I feel like Rollins shines. I think you can tell me why he doesn't, and we've already gotten a little bit into some of his flaws. But I do think he's a guy who his stuff looks good, sometimes a little too good. He definitely puts on entertaining matches. He challenges himself. I would point to, as far as his matches, I'll point to his Ambrose matches. I'll point to his Cena matches. And what he was able to do in the ring with Brock, I think, was pretty special, too. And I think he had some good matches with Reigns. But it might be a catalog of decent matches rather than a catalog of great matches, which, to your point, is kind of what he's missing, is that resume.
Yeah, I think, I mean, look, his Shield stuff is great.
Sure.
Like, you put those. All the six-man, the big pay-per-view six-man tags, those all fall in the great for me.
And honestly, to his credit, I think he got his architect nickname from the fact that he was the focal point on a lot of those Shield matches. He was the guy putting the matches together. I don't think it was Reigns and Ambrose doing the bulk of the work lifting in that first year with the Shield.
No, to me, he was the best part of those matches.
Yeah, for
like,
sure.
I give him all the credit for that. I would also point to his triple threat with Brock and Cena.
Yeah, great match.
I think that's a 5-star match for me.
I would agree with you.
It's top notch. But again, you're in there with two guys that like are masters, right? So like,
absolutely.
I'm not saying that to throw shade on him, but like,
yeah.
I would counter that the Brock match, the solo Brock match, again, it fell short for me, but it's because of how they structured it. Like, mm-hmm. Brock's squashes of Cena and Reigns worked, in my view, as wildly as they did because of the catharsis that went with it.
Yeah.
Like, you wanted to see both those guys get killed, so the match was amazing. But they did the same match, but you didn't have that catharsis with Seth Rollins.
Yeah, no one wanted to see Rollins get killed.
So, again, it's not his fault. The only other thing I'd say about his work rate I wish there was more selling. Mm-hmm. Like, if someone's working your leg for 10 minutes, please don't jump around up on it.
Yeah.
Like, and that was kind of one of the issues I had with his match with Triple H at this past year's WrestleMania.
Right.
Like, he's selling the moment, but then it goes away. And, I mean, there's a lot of guys that have that problem. But, again, when we're narrowing down, these are the things we pick on.
Sure. So, all things said and done, I feel like Seth Rollins is going to make your list. You can tell me if I'm wrong on that. I feel like he just makes it on the lower end.
I don't know if he makes it.
Really?
I would say if he has another 5 years with the exact same career trajectory, mm-hmm. like same output, everything, he probably comfortably makes the list. Yeah. In the way like a Christian does, you know, like something like that, you know? But for me now, I don't know if there's enough. It will take other guys falling off for him to kind of move up.
I would say he's no surprise, he's comfortably on my list. I don't know where he's going to end up on my list. I feel like he's accomplished enough that he's got to have a prominent place there just because of the kind of list I'm building, which celebrates kind of the accomplishments of being able to be a top guy, and I do like his matches. But honestly, you've swayed me a lot with this podcast, and I think he's probably not going to be as high for me as he was before, and I'm never going to enjoy him again. So thank you.
Good. As long as I could ruin something for you, that would be. I feel like I've accomplished something today.
Absolutely. All right. I think we've had our say on Seth Rollins. Anything else you wanted to get to with him?
Nope.
No. You're done. You're done with Rollins.
I'm spent.
All right. Well, you guys can hit up the Place to Be Nation Facebook page. Tell us what you thought of this pod blast. Tell us what you think of Seth Rollins. I'm on Twitter as @BenJMorse. I know Aaron's on the Twitter as well.
Aaron D. George.
Yep. If you're lucky, you can get a response from him. Work hard.
The D stands for dumbass.
But this is great, man. Thanks for taking the time to do this. And hopefully we'll get to do a few more of these pod blasts in the future.
My pleasure, Ben. Thank you.
Go let us know what you think.